Here in Australia, we are slowly getting closer to October 14, the date of the Voice to Parliament referendum. And while there has been a number of debates for both sides of the vote, we know this event will be a crucial point in Australia's history. However, our country isn't the only one that wants to make sure First Nations peoples are heard, with many other political institutions across the globe already having created different ways to represent and hear Indigenous peoples' voices. Professor Michael Leach is an expert in politics and international relations at Swinburne University and joins us this morning to discuss how other nations represent Indigenous voices in government. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on The Record.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the Voice to Parliament has been a topic of discussion for a long time, with many people saying it's a first and we've never seen anything like it. But it's not entirely true. There are four different categories of how political institutions have ensured Indigenous peoples are heard. Can you tell us about these categories and what's involved in them?
Yes. I mean, obviously a number of countries around the world have Indigenous populations, and there are different models for doing that. It's by no means unprecedented. So a really common model is to have reserved seats in Parliament. New Zealand has reserved seats in Parliament. Taiwan has reserved seats in Parliament for Indigenous people. Places like Bolivia, Maine and the United States has had reserved seats in their legislature since the 19th century. That's a much more powerful model than is being offered here. The Voice would be an external advisory body to the Parliament. It wouldn't actually represent a voice within the Parliament. Be outside the Parliament and once a year would talk to the Parliament. The Parliament would have to listen to it but wouldn't have to do what they recommend. It's just an elected advisory body. So that's one way that Indigenous voices have been done around the world. And of course, just across the ditch in New Zealand, that's how they do it there. There's seven reserved seats for Maori in the New Zealand Parliament, has been since the 19th century.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that there are countries like New Zealand, it's just over the road, so to speak, and they have those reserved seats, but it's not something we've done in our country. Can you tell us a bit more about some of the other categories that other countries have implemented?
Yeah, so that's the reserved seats model. The other one is devolved self-government. So places like Norway, Finland, Sweden have the Sami parliaments, the Indigenous people, used to be known as the Lapps of northern Scandinavia, have their own parliaments. That's quite similar in a way to what's being proposed here because they have a consultative advisory role only. They're not really parliaments. They're called parliaments, but they don't do lawmaking. What they do is advise the Norwegian and the Finnish and the Swedish governments on their Indigenous policy. So even though they use the word parliament, it's a bit more like this model. Then you've got the Nunavut Parliament in Canada of the Inuit people, which used to be called Eskimos. That's an actual parliament. They devolve some powers to the Nunavut Parliament. They have local powers in the same way that a council would to make laws in the areas where they are a majority. An interesting one, of course, is right here in Australia, the Torres Strait Regional Authority. Everyone has omitted this in the debate, but the Torres Strait Regional Authority has some powers to, like a council does, to implement policies up there in the Torres Strait. Interestingly, they also have a role, not only for forming and implementing policies in the Torres Strait, but advising the Queensland and the federal governments on their policy in the Torres Strait. So they're an elected body. They're elected every 4 years. One of their roles is to advise the Queensland and the federal parliament about Torres Strait Islander policy. So it's very similar to what's being proposed. And it's interesting that in this debate we haven't heard that Australia's other Indigenous people, Torres Strait Islanders, pretty much already have something like The Voice and have had for 30 years. So the question would be, you know, why would we not have one for the much larger other group of Indigenous people in this country on the mainland?
Yeah, it's really quite interesting hearing that we have already had something similar within, well, part of Australian government for almost 30 years, like you said, yet not a lot of people know about it, and it's not really being discussed when it comes to this discussion and conversation around The Voice and its implementation.
That's right. I mean, your listeners might remember there was a thing called ATSIC that was abolished in the Howard era. When that was abolished in 2005, the Torres Strait Islander Regional Authority was not abolished, and it lived on, and it was a similar model. There were some issues with ATSIC at the time, but since that time, Aboriginal people on the mainland haven't had that equivalent sort of elected voice to Parliament. But it continued, and I think people have ignored this in the debate, that it continued in the Torres Strait. So there's a potential issue of equity there between the two, you know, major Indigenous groupings in this country.
Yeah, is there a specific reason why we haven't seen the same for Aboriginal people on the mainland to something similar to what the Torres Strait Islander people have had?
Yeah, look, there's been different attempts. So there was one in the Rudd era to replace the former Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, and that's been a big gap, if you like, since that time. The voice has come from Indigenous people through the Uluru Statement as the thing that would replace that. It's been a long time coming, in their view, and I'm just pointing out that all this time there's been in the Torres Strait something that's very parallel to the voice. It's elected every 4 years. And among its roles is to advise governments on Torres Strait Islander policy. So, you know, it's not like this thing is unprecedented and we've never seen it before. In fact, it's been there for 30 years up in the Torres Strait.
You're listening to On the Record. We're joined by Professor Michael Leach from Swinburne University, and we're discussing how other countries represent Indigenous voices in government. How effective have some of these ways been in representing Indigenous voices in other nations?
Yeah, very effective. So, you know, in Taiwan, there's not only reserved seats, there's also the Council of Indigenous Peoples, and that's much more similar to what's being proposed here. The Council of Indigenous Peoples advises the government. It's got a minister in the government, in the executive government, to make sure that Indigenous people are being heard when policy is being formed. What we've found around, even in Australia, is where Indigenous people are consulted on policies, they're more effective because Indigenous people understand what's going to work better in their communities. So, for example, during COVID, some of the Indigenous communities in Western Australia, your state, but also Northern Territory, had some of the best COVID rates in the world, as in the lowest, not in Australia, but in the world, because they were consulted on what would work for their communities. So people took notice of that, really good health outcomes when people were consulted. The voice is an effort to try and make sure that that's always the approach to Indigenous policy, that at least Indigenous policy people will be heard as these policies are being developed for their communities, because the idea is we'll get better outcomes. If we'll get better outcomes, we'll also save a lot of money because they'll be better targeted. So the view is that this will actually save a lot of money, a lot of wasteful money that's been spent on Indigenous policies that don't really work. These are more likely to be effective, and there's some evidence from policies around Australia that works better when Indigenous peoples co-design policies for their communities. And that's effectively what the voice is trying to do.
So how common are these councils that are similar to the voice in other countries?
Yes, well, Australia is not the only settler colonial country in the world. Canada's got an Indigenous advisory committee that I talk about in the article that's quite similar. As well as having the Nunavut Parliament, it also has First Nations peoples that represent a minority in the country generally, sort of like Australia, and they've handled that through an Indigenous Advisory Committee, which is really quite similar to the one being proposed here in the Voice. I guess the difference is that in this referendum, there's an idea that we're going to put this into the Constitution of Australia. That happened in Taiwan, by the way, so some people have been saying that there's no constitutionally guaranteed voice in other countries. Well, that isn't true. Taiwan has a constitutionally entrenched Indigenous voice as well, in terms of its reserved seats. So there are parallels all around the world. The major difference is that the Uluru Statement wants that to be entrenched in the Constitution. And what that would achieve would be that it would be difficult for future governments to abolish the voice to Parliament. They'd have to go back to the Australian people. That said, the Parliament of Australia that we all elect would be the one designing the voice. All its powers, how it's elected, all those things would be done by the parties in the Parliament that we all elect, not just the one in government, but the whole Parliament. So all those would be designed by the Parliament of Australia. The one significance of it being a constitutional referendum is that it would be impossible to just simply abolish it. And that's what happened to ATSIC, of course, back in 2005. It was simply abolished. And then Indigenous people who were the architects of the Uluru Statement don't want to see that happen.
It's quite interesting hearing how similar, but also the difference of having it entrenched in our constitution. So it can't just be pushed away, like you were saying. It's nice to hear that there are other countries who have done similar things, and it's been really effective and really helpful for them.
Yeah. So yeah, Taiwan is actually very similar. People may not be aware that Taiwan was, you know, once essentially a Pacific island, and over the centuries, Han Chinese people moved into that island from mainland China, and they have an indigenous people with about 3% of the population. It's pretty similar to Australia, and actually, and they've had reserve seats in Parliament and also the Council of Indigenous Peoples. And this proposal here, the Voice proposal, is really quite modest by comparison. It doesn't propose reserve seats in the Parliament. It just proposes an advisory committee to our Parliament, and the Parliament of Australia would not have to do what the advisory committee says. It would simply have to listen to them every year. That's what the Voice is proposing. And yes, there are similar institutions around the world where countries have Indigenous peoples.
So why haven't we heard much about any of these other forms of Indigenous representation in government during this big discussion of the Voice?
Well, that's a good question. And I think the media, I mean, your show is a nice exception. I don't think the media has done a terrific job in this country of presenting the facts. I mean, it's tended to report what the yes side says and what the no side says, and it sort of highlights this division. And I think to ordinary Australians who have pretty good bullshit detectors, it's a little bit off-putting, you know, because you're seeing this kind of heated debate without a lot of light being cast. And I think the media hasn't done a terrific job of explaining the facts of what's at stake in this referendum, including that Australia would be one of the few countries around the world that doesn't have a type of voice for its Indigenous people. That's the reality. Australia would be, since the abolition of ATSIC, hasn't had a body, and most countries with Indigenous populations do have some form of guaranteeing that Indigenous voices are heard. This is a fairly modest one by comparison, and I think the media has a role in explaining that to the voting public, and good on you in your radio station for doing that.
Well, thank you so much. We always love being able to delve into these kinds of topics and to shed light on some of that information that people may not be able to find in the mainstream media. We've been discussing today about how other nations represent Indigenous voices in government. But before we let you go, how beneficial would it have been for everyday Australians to know that Australia is actually one of the few that doesn't actually have a voice, and what other countries are doing?
Look, I think it's a really important part of this debate. I mean, Taiwan, New Zealand, Bolivia, Canada, I mean, the list goes on of countries that have structured some way of allowing Indigenous voices to come into the policy process in relation to policies that affect Indigenous people. It's a very common thing to do. There are different models out there. It's very clear that the proposed Voice is one of the more modest ones in terms of powers. It's just an external advisory body. I think that is a really important aspect of the debate. And the other, I think, really important thing to get across is that Australia's other Indigenous peoples, the Torres Strait Islanders, have had a very similar thing for 30 years. So those are the I'm disappointed to see that these facts aren't being, you know, reported more widely in the media, because Australians deserve to be well informed as they make this important decision on October the 14th.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the program this morning and breaking down what other countries are doing and how it compares to what we're proposing in Australia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on this program.
You're most welcome. That was Professor Michael Leach from Swinburne University. He's an expert in politics and international relations and joined us this morning to discuss how other countries represent Indigenous voices in their government. You can read his full article on theconversation.com.